Hey, I'm Stevie.
What's up? I'm Monty J.
And you're listening to the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast,
where we take a deep dive with your favorite contemporary romance authors,
asking them questions about everything from their writing process to their reading habits, plus so much more.
Join us as we help you find your next bookshelf boyfriend. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast. Vicky James, welcome, welcome.
Hi.
I say I because Stevie's not here, as I told on the intro, but I am super excited to have you, okay? You. This all happened because I was posting like my favorite, I think it was like my favorite books that make me feel like Taylor Swift's like Red album or whatever.
Yeah, on Instagram,
People were asking for me to post like the recommendations or whatever, and I had posted one, which I mean, I don't think that it feels like Taylor Swift, but it very much does give me that angsty, like, love it to death. And I was like, this is like my all-time favorite rock star romance, and like nobody can say otherwise. And then we started talking, and I was like, yeah, you got to come on the podcast because I'm like literally obsessed. So here you are.
It was a no-brainer. Sign me up. More for as long as there was beer involved, I'm there.
Yes, exactly. Me too. So yeah, we both have beers and we're super excited. Stevie had, we had like apparently never talked about the fact that we had both read your books, but when I had first started like reading, I guess like indie romance and like getting into the genre or whatever, I was like, because I'm very much a mood reader, right? So I'll like read like 8,000 hockey things in a row. Yeah. And then I got on this rock star kick and I was like, where are all the rock star romances? I know they're here. And when I found Cherry Beats, I was like, nothing is ever going to live up to this ever.
Oh my goodness. Thank you.
Ever. Like I can't read anything else because this is it. So we're going
to compliment.
Oh, you're most welcome. So we're going to talk about your books and Cherry Beats starting it off and the kind of like the series in general.
Yeah.
So like I said, I love this book. It's like my favorite rock star romance of all time. And I love Cherry, who's AKA Tessa. She was like snarky and spunky, but like also like awkward. And I loved that. So like, what was your favorite part of writing her character?
I think Tessa for me was the most me I've ever written in a character. I was just for sort of 6 years before that, I'd written very high angst romances that were, the women were weak, but they were kind of softer. They were, you know, softer around the edges. And I just got to the point where I'd written so much of the same that I thought, I really want to write somebody that reminds me of me, you know, all the mistakes I've made, all the things that I've said that I shouldn't have said, the opportunities I've probably lost by holding back things. Yeah. And I just started writing it. And I don't know if you know that before I was Vicky James, I was Victoria L. James. I wrote under a different name. I was, you know, under the radar, writing under a different name. And I didn't know when I first released that there was another author out there who was far more successful than me. And she was called Victoria James. Mm-hmm. And we kept getting confused. And when this idea of the rockstar romance with Cherry Beats came in, I just thought, I'm going to change my name and write it and release it under a different name, mm-hmm. under Vicky James. So everyone would know it was me, but, you know, slightly different name. And I'm going to go for it and write what I really want to write, not what I think I should be writing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So literally, this first chapter, as soon as I sat down, I didn't do the prologue at first where she's younger. I went straight into chapter one of her in the bar.
Yeah.
And it just absolutely poured out of me. It flew out of my fingers like you wouldn't, like nothing else. And it just felt like, Tessa for me felt like home. Whenever I picked up and wrote her, I was like, this is me. So she was so much fun to write. She was just, I mean, that makes me sound like I'm saying I'm fun.
No, it's fine.
She was just so freeing, and she had this snarky comeback for everything. But underneath that edge, you could see there was a really vulnerable girl that just wanted to love this man and to love him forever. But she thought he was way out. She had a very simple life, you know, working behind a bar, nothing pushing her forward, no great achievements. And Presley, who she'd been watching for years, had everything ahead of him. And she just knew, why would he want me? Why would he want me? What have I got to offer him? So you could see that real kind of push and pull from the start of, I want him, but I can't have him. Mm-hmm. And then obviously when the opportunity came around, that was just,
it happened. I liked that she was, I mean, she's one of the most relatable female characters I've ever read, because while she's also snarky and spunky and has like these amazing comebacks, and her and Presley's banter is just amazing. Like I said, she's also like awkward, and like she like has like these moments where she's vulnerable, like you said. And speaking of, listen, I'm telling you, and I think it was like, it has, I said something about like how it has my favorite scene of all time in it, and that's when she's playing, listening to Bed of Roses by Bon Jovi. I was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever read. And when she turned around and he was there, I had to put my Kindle down. I was like, oh my God. I was like, it's going to happen.
You can see that scene on like the big screen, can't you? You can see that moment in head of her turning around and realizing he's there watching.
I had to like shield my eyes. I was like, oh no. I'm such a physical reader that like when something like that happens, I'm like, oh no, she didn't.
Secondhand embarrassment.
So bad.
I get it.
So Presley, I loved him. I loved his character. I liked that he was not your typical kind of like rock star. He had like a very dynamic personality, and he was also just like, I love him. I just loved him. Okay. Yes. And I have been dying to know this answer, and I need to know what inspired the leather jacket and its importance.
Okay. This is a really simple answer, and it might not be as exciting as you.
It doesn't matter. I still want to know.
So I don't know if you know, but the inspiration behind Presley, the muse for him is Christopher Mason, the model.
I love him. Don't even forget. Right.
Everybody does, but I never seen him before. I was just scrolling through Pinterest.
Yeah.
And then I saw him, and it was literally like a stop, whoa, wow moment when I saw him. He has that face, doesn't he? You know?
Oh yeah. It's like Greek God. It's like, what the fuck?
Mason, he's not human. He's like just molded to perfection in every
I know.
But there was one shot of him when he had longer hair, and he's standing on a rooftop, I think it is, in somewhere like LA, and he's got nothing on underneath and just this leather jacket with some dark skinny jeans.
Ooh.
And when I saw that, and bearing in mind that I was already kind of, Cherry Beats was in my head already that I was going to write it.
Yeah.
And I knew who Tessa was going to be. And then as soon as I saw Christopher Mason in that shot, I was like, wow. And the leather jacket, more than his face, believe it or not, what stood out for me. And I was like, oh, that's his signature look, like, you know, that's that is his thing, like, no matter what, even if he's been told on a photo shoot he's to be bare chested, or he's got to have his jacket with him. So it just kind of went from there, really. And I didn't really realize the significance of it until the scene where he hands her the jacket
paparazzi?
With the cat. When he sends the jacket back with the
motorbike
and gets her to, you know, do what he makes her do in it. So that was the moment I was like, this is more than just a jacket. This is a jacket.
With the paparazzi like grabs at it and he like pops off. Bro, I was like, oh my God, I was in tears. I was like, oh my God. I love him so much. I love it.
He's this guy that loves music, but isn't that bothered by fame. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think Cherry ever saw that. She thought that he wanted the fame as well. And then when she realized that he didn't, that's when she started to open herself up to him a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then, it's just
beautiful.
Beautiful story.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right. So we're going to go next, which is Dirty Rock. And Rhett Ryan is my baby daddy, period. I love this man. He is chef kisses. Okay. Yeah. So what do you think the hardest part of Rhett's character was to write? Because, you know, he was a little bit of a.
That was the hardest part in Cherry Beats.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, you didn't really like Rhett.
You very much manho.
Yeah, you at the end of it and you're like, what a douche, you know, why would anyone want to write a book about him? But when I was injecting bits of Rhett into Cherry Beats, I kind of knew there was a backstory to him that had made him that way, that had made him, you know, be a bit of an idiot. And he wasn't just snarky and, you know, quick to bite like Tess was. He was mean.
Oh yeah, malicious. He went for your throat.
he said the things that nobody else in the room would say. So I love a challenge, and I really wanted to write something from a rock star point of view, because obviously I'd done the book, which Tessa was it was from her point of view and, you know, following Presley, and we didn't see Presley's point of view till the end. But I wanted to write a rock star romance from the actual rock star. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what better way to do it than Rhett? But the biggest part was making his journey a likable one.
Yeah.
And a redeemable one. And, you know, at first I really want to show that grittiness of what he is, and with the lap dancers and the drugs. And
I was like, I love him.
Yeah.
I'm in love.
Everything that, you know, readers sometimes don't like. I wanted to throw it out at him, but then show how somebody can come in and make him look at himself and realize that's not who he really is.
So
the easiest parts for Rhett were the quiet, vulnerable moments, really, when he was inside his own head and thinking about how he wanted to be. And the harder parts were the ones where he was acting like a bit of an asshole, but he's not really.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you know, so
it's like a literal contradiction. You're having like the inner monologue is contradicting the dialogue.
Yeah. Then by the end of it, you know, you're kind of thinking, who is this guy? I don't recognize him from the beginning of from the end of Cherry Bees.
He was
fun to write. He was great.
I love him. Okay. And we have Julia Speed to thank for the information. She's such a queen, such a badass. I loved her. And
she takes no punches. She will just
well, I mean, she's like worked around she knows the lifestyle. Like, she knows these people, like how they are. And I think what I really liked about her is that she knew before he knew that was not who he was.
Definitely.
It's just so good. It's so good. Yeah. So I want to know, did you always know this was going to be a series? Like, when you started Cherry Beats, was it just going to be
No. Well, like I said to you at the beginning, obviously I was released most of my books through Victoria L. James, and I had this, I even sort of made this word up for what I wrote, and I called it romanced, so it's like angsty romance. And that was on my banners at signings, and, you know, I was like, Victoria L. James, romance. So when I released this Cherry Bees, I just went at it thinking it would be a one-off and people might not pick it up and people might not like it. And then Vicky James suddenly made Victoria L. James look like who's that? So it just exploded. I mean, when I say, you know, I thought I'd done okay before with my old name, but when Cherry Beats came out and I felt better in my own skin. You know, I'm not a Victoria, I'm a Vicky. I've always been down to earth, kind of, you know, not stuck up. I like to just Vic or Vicky, and writing under this name of Victoria, it felt like it wasn't me.
Yeah.
Then when Vicky James started to do well and Cherry Beats was just everywhere, I thought, this is kind of a sign and I need to just keep going. And I'd opened up this world with the Youth Gone Wild that there was just so much you could write about. You know, there still is. You've got sort of Bourbon, and then you've got Molly, and you've got Dex, and all those kind of people that you can explore. And I just fell in love with it. And then maybe I shouldn't have done it, but everything that I'd done before just didn't seem to matter. And then that was it, straight on the Vicky James track. And I just got rid of Victoria L. James completely and changed everything over, and that's who I am now. So no, it wasn't meant to be a series, but I'm glad it turned into one. And I think I think I've still got a lot of more books to write in that series as well. So
yes, please, Jesus, please. So Ghost Note is the third book, and I think that this one was the most emotional for me. This shit wrecked my life, dude. I was like, because like I binge read them. I was like, oh my god, there better be more books in this fucking, I was like, this better be a series. So I downloaded them all immediately and like speed read them, and Ghost Note messed me up. I had to take a break. I was like, this
really
is messing me up. Yeah. So
did it bring back some high school
kind of, I was like, what is this? I was like, why are you doing this to me right now?
That's the comment I've had the most about Ghost Note. You know, everyone loved Cherry Beats because it was like thrilling and fun, and then Dirty Rock was edgy, and then Ghost Note, they was like, what are you doing to me? Like, why am I crying all the time?
I think you really invoked like that teenage love that you had, that first love that really, like, because I think that when you're in high school, you know, you feel everything so intensely because you're young, you know, like you haven't been exposed to all of like the bad, well, not like, I mean, you may have, but like all of like the brutalness that's in the world, right? So when you have that first love, when you're at that age, it's like, pure and so intense, and you like invoked all those feelings, and I was like, God, I hated high school, but this is just so good.
And it's always that vulnerability, isn't it? Like when you're that young, you're not jaded by anything. You've got you've got that one person, and you think they're going to be your forever, no matter how long you've been with them. And Daisy had been with Danny for so long, and then when he turned around to her in the prologue, mm-hmm. the prologue of the book, you know, the first scene is them splitting up.
I was like, this is fucked up. What is happening?
And then again, having him come back and seeing how Daisy had become so jaded by everything, and she had this other guy, Ben, in her life who was willing to give her whatever she wanted, but she still couldn't get past that first heartbreak. And
yeah,
we've all been there, haven't we, at some point in our life? You know, we've all had our hearts broken, and we've all wanted something more and got nothing in return, and those moments really help you write. Well, I mean, you'll know they help kind of, you have to tap into all the memories and think, I don't want to drag them back up, but let's go there.
Drag them back up. It's like, here we go.
How messed up we can get, yeah. Exactly. And it's fun. It's kind of fun because you
it's heal. It's kind of therapeutic. You're like healing yourself, like your inner emotion, right?
And so, you give yourself the ending you think you might have deserved back then.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what makes book boyfriends better than actual ones.
Definitely.
Because we can redeem them.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
I loved that Danny knew he needed to love himself before he could really love Daisy the way that she deserved to be loved, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was what made it so emotional, is because, like, you knew that these two characters were, like, meant to be together, but, like, they both had so much shit that they needed to figure out on their own before they could really come together. And that was what made it so angsty and heartbreaking, because it's like, oh my God, I know you guys need to be together. So, like, was there any part in this story that was harder to write than others?
Again, I think a bit like with Rhett, it was making Danny redeemable, because he was he was cold straight from the beginning. We learned that he'd dumped Daisy without any prior warning. He'd not gone to his own parents' funeral after everything that had happened. He'd kind of gone off and ditched the world and thought, this is my new life now. So at the start, you really hate him. Well, yeah. Hey, I don't know. Dislike him?
I was like indifferent. I was like, what the fuck are you doing right now, my
dad? Yeah. Because it starts on a breakup, you're so confused as to where it's gonna go. Like,
do we have a new love interest? Do we what is happening?
Yeah, and then in chapter one, we've got Ben, and Ben is there, and he's straight away, he's this perfect guy for Daisy, but you can tell she's just not into it.
Exactly.
And you're thinking, what's gonna happen? So when Danny comes back, it was making the excuses for why he'd been away and making them believable, because I didn't want, the thing with me with writing is, and you know, I don't take away whatever anybody else does, but when I read a book, I want to believe what I'm reading.
Yeah.
Even if I know it's fiction, I want to believe that emotion. I don't just want something like a poor excuse writing down then for Daisy to have forgiven Danny and that be it, and it'd be that easy. He had to work for it, and he had to prove why. And that's what made their relationship so good when everything comes about. And, you know, she's a bit like Tessa in the end. You know, she starts off soft, but she gets harder. And and I love that. I love seeing somebody make the mistakes, you know.
Exactly. I agree with you. I think that even when you're reading something like paranormal, like where it's vampires, like, or like werewolves or whatever, I think I want to believe, like, I need to believe that the emotion that, like, I need a reason for, like, why they act the way they do. And it absolutely can't be just something like, oh, you know, like, it's like, I think that's why I read bully romance sometimes, like dark romance, is because
I love it.
I don't even care. Okay, listen, I know shit. I don't even care. I think this is why I read it, is because it's like when they have like an explanation, like when it's shitty, like, oh, I like broke a fingernail and that's why I'm mean to the world. It's like,
But and you disconnect from the characters though, don't you, when it's like that? You disconnect from them because you're thinking, well, what makes you relatable to me as a reader? Why should I invest in you if there's no reality? I mean, I bang on about fiction all the time, like, let it go, it's fiction, you know.
Yeah.
It's fiction. But you have to have a little bit of reality in there.
I think the fiction part is the plot, and I think that the character part is the emotional part.
Nailed it.
What I feel like needs to be real, you know? If you break up with somebody, I can't have it just be like, oh, I just wasn't feeling it, but we'll get back together later. You know, I need it to be like, there's a reason that I can, you know, feel like these characters are real to me kind of thing. So you did that very well with Danny.
Oh, thank you.
With all of these characters. So I loved that.
I love how much you love them.
Oh my God, obsessed, like no joke. So this is like the hardest question ever for authors, myself included. And Stevie makes me ask it to people all the time because she likes to see people sweat. So if this series could be turned into a TV/movie, who would you cast as the lead roles?
You see, I have an answer for every question.
Oh!
This is because I have to generally have a muse of some sort.
Okay.
But the thing, right, you're going to have to bear with me because obviously my accent's already one thing between us. My accent's very strong. But some of the pronunciations of these are just insane.
Me too.
For Harry Beats, it would be Christopher Mason.
Okay, yeah, love him.
And then you might be surprised by this one.
Oh no, but I'm nervous.
For Tessa, it would be Kristen Stewart.
I like Angel Kristen Stewart, the Charlie's Angels Kristen Stewart?
Yes, yeah, like that. But obviously with like funny, smiley, not as brooding as Bella, you know. But when I saw pictures of her on Pinterest with cherry like red hair, she's got that rocky kind of edge that could really work.
I actually love that. I love Kristen Stewart. Yeah. I literally love her.
But Tessa is one of those characters that could also not have a muse. She's kind of just there. Anybody could play her as long as they had the right look.
Yeah. No, I like that though. I think that fits like really, really well, honestly.
Yeah. It's not a lot of people. Some people don't like her, do they? She's you know, like my mom.
They only see her as Bella. And that's the thing is like, but she did a phenomenal job. Like, why do you not like Kristen when she, like, if you've read Twilight, like, I was never a Twilight person. That's just me. And I think it's because I think that's because I read the Black Dagger Brotherhood first and I was like, oh, this is nothing compared to this, you know?
Yeah.
So I wasn't a huge Twilight fan, but like when you read Bella, like that is Bella. Like Kristen Stewart did a phenomenal job playing that part.
So did Rob Pattinson with Edward and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think the problem with there is that the spotlight was just on them far too much and they kind of went into themselves when they were playing the last few movies rather than, if you watch the first two movies, they're far superior than they're acting in the last three because they were easy with the characters. Whereas with the last three, they were just under the microscope far too much. I felt sorry for them. I love them.
I did. But no one hates Twilight as much as Robert Pattinson. Nobody hates Twilight as much as Batman does. I think Kristen did a great job because like if you read Bella, that's how she is. She is that kind of like, you know, that awkward, weird, and she did a fantastic job. So I was like, if you're going to hate on anybody, hate on Bella. Don't hate on Kristen, because I think she's a phenomenal actress.
That's why she'd make a good Tessa Lisbon, because she's so awkward and quick to come up with things like that. So yeah, she was in my head and on my little mood board when I was doing it.
Ryan,
you might not have heard of this guy, because he's a model.
Okay, I'm here for
that. My
Google's ready.
This is where pronunciation might go wrong. Yes. Gaspard Meunier. Do you want me to spell it for you? So it's G-A-S-P-A-R-D.
G-A-S-P-A-R-D, okay.
And then M-E-N-I-E-R.
Okay. Oh my God, okay. I found his Instagram.
Are you looking
at? I'm looking at, God. Oh my God, yes.
Obviously, he's like a bit more tattooed, but yeah.
His hair. Oh,
and if you go to his Instagram, you'll see that he actually sings and plays guitar.
Of course he does. Of course he does.
And he smokes.
Oh my God. Yeah, I was literally like, there's this picture of him lighting a cigarette and I want to die.
It's red.
It's perfect. This is so good. Oh my God, these are so good. Okay, all right, continue.
And then Julia Speed would be Frankie Bridge. She's like an English singer, so you might not have heard of her. Frankie with an IE and then Bridge.
Oh, with the short pixie cut.
Short hair, yeah.
Love that. She's stunning.
She's gorgeous, really gorgeous. It's
so good. Usually when authors come up with these, I'm like, yeah, you know, we could change it a little bit. But these are really good.
Hey, see, I know what I'm talking about. and then for Danny, this is another one that I can't pronounce. Diego Barruico? Barruico? Diego Barruico? B-A-R-R-U-E-C-O.
Yeah, I got him. Oh, God. He's hot, too. Jesus. Oh, my God. This is so good. Oh, my God. This is every high school girl's crush ever.
Isn't it? With the skateboard and all that kind of stuff. And then
he's like my Tumblr imagination gone wild.
I'm going to have to send you these names once we're done, aren't we? So you can, like, get your little pictures up and things and just remember.
I'm going to.
And then Daisy, it was Lily Collins.
Fucking love her.
Yeah, me
fucking
too.
Fucking love her. Just... Are we doing like Lily Collins in like Love? What is that movie?
Well, it's not Lily Collins in Emily in Paris because that's far too glamorous for Daisy.
No, it's like, what is that? It's like one of my favorite movies of all time. I rewatch it every single month.
Oh, Love Rosie.
Stuck in Love.
Oh, I was thinking of Love, Rosie.
Oh, that's a good one too, though. That's a good one too, yeah.
She's quite lost in that film as well, isn't she? So,
have you watched Stuck in Love?
I don't think so.
Oh my gosh. Vicky, you got to watch it. It's one of the best movies ever.
I'm writing it down now. I've got my pen out.
Stuck in Love. And I think that Lily Collins is Daisy towards the end of the book.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So,
I'm gonna watch that, yeah.
Oh, you're going to cry like a baby.
I always do. I cry at toilet roll adverts and everything. I'm ridiculous.
It's literally about a family of three. Well, four, technically. It's like a dad who's like a New York Times bestselling author. He's like a Faulkner winner. Like, he's a famous author. Mm-hmm. And then he has two children. He has one who is a guy, and then Lily, who is a girl, obviously. And they're both writers themselves, but they write like differently, and they're younger, and like Will, like the girl is just publishing her first book. And they're going through this, like, the dad is still in love with the mom who is about to get remarried. And then the girl is going through like this guy who's like in love with her, but she doesn't believe in love because her parents broke up. And then the boy has like a crush on this girl he's in high school with, who's like really toxic for him. And it's about all of their love stories.
So it's like different stories coming together at the end. Oh, it's I love those kind of ones where they have like stories running side by side.
Yeah, like, it's so
good. Love Actually gets a lot of hate, but I love Love Actually.
It's kind of like that vibe, but like less characters.
I'm gonna watch that. I'm gonna watch it maybe tonight.
If you do, you have to message me and be like, thank you so much for this amazing recommendation.
you got it. All right,
so what is next for you as we head into 2022?
Well, I know we're recording this today. When does this go out? Is this
Friday?
So on Friday. Tomorrow, which is Thursday, I've got the cover reveal for my next book, which is called The Bad Wedding Date, and that's releasing on January 25th. And I've not released in like 18 months. with COVID and everything, it's just been a really long year, and you know, a lot of writers are suffering at the moment, and I fell victim to it, kind of being stuck at home with the kids, and my husband's job changed to working at home, and there wasn't that peace and quiet anymore. And the writing just kind of went out of my head, but got it back. And The Bad Wedding Date is a fake date romance, and I love it. It's set in central London, so you've got things like the Savoy featuring in it. And it's about this girl who is from a very rich family, and she's a part of like an elite family that have a lot of connections in the city, but this girl Charlotte does not feel like she's a part of them. So she has to go to this wedding of a sister who's very sort of high society, wants to be in all the magazines, and Charlotte works in a care home. She rebelled against her family, didn't want anything to do with any of that. She saw her granddad ill when he was older, and she realized that she could contribute to the care home industry.
Yeah.
So she rebelled against them. So she needs a fake date for this wedding because they all look down on her.
Okay.
And her best friend, who was meant to go with her, cancels at the last minute. And then she meets a guy at the bus stop called Fraser Scott. And he happens to be wearing a suit.
Okay.
Fish. And she invites him along, but she doesn't know that he's got a hidden agenda and he isn't there by chance.
I'm gonna pre-order this real quick.
Yeah, it went on pre-order like 2 days ago, I think. So I'm really excited. It's a story that I really believe in, and it touches on some quite sensitive subjects. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of Me Too in there. You know, not in any great detail that it would trigger anybody, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But it's just, yeah, it's a really lovely story.
I pre-ordered it.
So in love with it. Ah, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm excited. I love a good fake date. See, for me, fake dating, fake wedding thing, date, whatever, is the same sell to me as friends to lovers. It's really hard for me. They're two of my favorite tropes, but I can literally keep on one hand the amount of books that I have like enjoyed from that trope, because I feel like in that trope, it's very easy to like make it, I want to say easy, but yes, that is the word.
You can just get that instant connection like from nowhere and you don't have to fight for it.
Exactly. And it's like, I'm not, but when they do it right, I'm like, yes.
Well, you put a little faith in me and just watch what happens, because it is.
I have faith.
Not your typical fake date romance. It's not, there's quite a lot of like underworld kind of crime and things going on.
Okay.
Charlotte isn't aware of what's going on. So it's dual point of view. You get to see it from both sides. Okay. Which I don't write a lot of dual point of views, but I felt like this one needed it to keep everybody in the know of what's happening while Charlotte doesn't, kind of thing. Just see what you think.
Trust me, don't even worry. I trust you. Because when people ask me for rock star romances and I recommend like Cherry Beats and Dirty Rock and that series, I'm like, now listen, when you go into it, it's not going to be like your typical rock star romance. Like none of them are, but they're so good. They're phenomenal.
I didn't want to write the typical one. I'd read a couple before. And don't get me wrong, I love them. I really, really love them.
Mm-hmm.
But then I read Drive by Kate Stewart. I don't know if you've read that one.
Oh my
god, it is so good. Like, she showed me another side of writing rock star romance that was believable. I didn't want to just write another man whore that was sleeping around and cheating and doing all this kind of stuff. I wanted to really delve into the mind of a rock star. And then I read Motley Crue's The Dirt.
The best.
And as I was reading it, I'm thinking, this is the story that needs to be told. Need to be told in fiction, not some pop star. And I've nothing against that, but
yeah,
I wanted a rock. I wanted rock and roll.
Dirty rock, heavy, sweaty.
And I was over like boy bands and all that. I wanted some grit, and that's what happened. So they're not your typical ones, but I love them. I am so.
You need to read. Have you read Stoned by Mandy Beck?
No.
That book fucked me up. It's a rock star romance, and the main character's name is Stone. And it fucked me up. It's really good. Is that a recent one? Huh?
Is that a recent release or is it?
No, it's been out for a while. I know that she has more in the series now, but I've only read Stoned because I was like, oh my god, this is like painful, because it's like about him, and it's kind of gives you like Daisy and Danny vibes, where they were together in high school. Like, she was with him through the start of his career, like the launch of his career. She was with him for the whole thing, like record label signings and like traveling around in a van and doing pop-up shows places. She was with him through the whole thing. And then he got on drugs, and like he got into life when they got famous and they got signed. And she had to leave. Like, she was like, I can't do it anymore with you. Like, I can't.
That sounds like it's right up my street. I've written it down. I'm gonna look it up. I'm always looking for books to read myself. You know, it's hard when you write, isn't it? When you're writing them, you dissect them as you would if you were writing them, and it takes a really, really superb author to kind of suck me in. And there are a lot out there.
Doing it. So we're gonna shift gears to writing questions. When did you first realize that you wanted to be like a writer / author?
You're going to groan at this answer. It was when I finished reading Twilight.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Me as I totally shit talked not liking Twilight.
It's okay, I didn't write it. I don't take it personally. I loved it. I was at a time in my life, I think it was about 29, 30 at the time. Mm-hmm. And everyone kept telling me to read them and read them. And, you know, me and my husband were going through, with the recession had just hit in 2008. Mm-hmm. And he lost his job where he was working. And I'd just gone on maternity leave. So we were really on our ass money-wise. We didn't have anything. And he'd just been... he just got a job after a year out of work. He got a job sort of 4 hours away from my family and where I live. And now I know 4 hours isn't a long drive in America, but in England, 4 hours.
The fuck, away. It is. Yeah, it is. 4 hours is a long ass drive. That's back 4 hours
away from family is just, well, I've never done it before. So I was really like down and, you know, trying to stay afloat for my little baby and that he was only a year old and stay strong for my husband and my two stepchildren who were growing up. And I read Twilight and I just by the time I finished with it, I don't know what it was. I can't even explain it. I just thought I can do this. Like I could do that. I'm not saying I could do this as in, oh, it was rubbish, as in I could evoke those feelings. I could do it even if I just wrote for me. I didn't want to be a writer or, you know, release. I just wanted to do something for me that would get my head out of worrying about life and money and the kids. And so I started writing just on this old laptop that barely even turned on. And I think after about 4 days of just being on this laptop, my husband, he was like, what are you doing? And I think he thought I was on some chat room, you know. Trying to find myself a rich daddy. I'm sick of this poor life. So I just spun my laptop around and showed him. And he was like, oh, my God, that's brilliant. And I thought he'd laugh. And he said, oh, go for it and do it. So I wrote 2 books that will never, ever see the light of day because they were so, so, so bad. They were the worst. The first one, I think, was called Flightless. And it was about this girl who went to live with a grandma and fell in love with a ghost.
I love that, though. I love that, though.
And at the time I was so into it, but when I look back at it now, like literally I will not let anybody read it. I think my mum read it and that was it, and I look back at it now and it is so
I will read
so
it
so bad but it's a journey, so you know I keep the copy of that because it's an important journey to see where you started. But yeah, that was it. I mean, I'd always written in journals, I'd always sort of tinkered if I was bored at work. I hope my old boss isn't listening to this. If I was bored at work, I would, you know, write the odd paragraph and then delete it and think, that's rubbish, you can't write. Deep down, I always knew it was in me. And then It took us losing everything and me quitting my job to move away for me to have the time to pick up the laptop and write. And this kind of felt like, I know it sounds cheesy, but it kind of feels like it's always meant to be, you know. This was always meant to be my life. I know.
I love it. No, it's not cheesy. It's fantastic.
You got to believe in fate a little bit. Your bad times are there for a reason. They're taking you somewhere else. I firmly believe that.
I agree. I 100% agree. So are you a plotter, a pantser, or like somewhere in between? And that's what we like to call a planter.
I am a full-on pantser without the L.
Oh my God. Everybody is. I don't know how you guys do it.
I co-write the Babylon MC series with Lou Stock. I don't know if you've ever read them. If you love the Cherry Beats and stuff, you would love the MC series. It's
okay, all right.
It's a different take on the MC. We don't write MC like the majority like write it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of really gritty, but also human. It's not just, you know, people.
I love MC
for the sake of it. But yeah, so that's a really great series. But when we first wrote the first book, it's 5-book series, finished. When we wrote the first book, we didn't have a clue we were ever going to release it. We did it as like a bit of Sons of Anarchy fan fiction. And we did it as fan fiction. And then at the end, we were like, this is pretty good.
Did you say it's Sons of Anarchy fan fiction?
Yeah. Well, kind of. Like not with the characters, but we just wanted, we'd finished the series, Sons of Anarchy. We watched it together. She's in Texas. I'm in England, obviously. And we just managed to watch it like, side, but you know, like running along by each other. So every morning we wake up and say, did you watch that episode last night? Yeah. And then when it finished, we couldn't let go. So it was like, well, why don't we just create our own? That'd be amazing.
I love that.
But even until the very last chapter of the fifth book, we did not plot one single part of it. We pantsed our way through it.
Y'all, but again,
that series felt like it wrote itself.
Yeah.
There wasn't any point where we were like, how do we untangle that and get it just flowed. And there were a lot of subplots going on as well. So yeah, pants for the win.
You know, absolutely. No, I could never.
You plot like every chapter then. Oh, give up. That is not your wall.
Yes, fucking is. It definitely is. That's the second half of it. The first half of it's already been taken down. But yeah.
So is each post-it note a chapter?
Yeah. Starts like here. No, here. Yeah, it starts like all the way over here and then down like a snake. So
what do you do if your characters take you off course?
So I'll just adapt and like go kill them. I'll just go up with another sticky note. But see, this is the thing for me, right? When I first started this podcast, I was like, oh, I'm definitely a planter. I'm in between. I'll do like a light outline and then, you know, like whatever. And then I realized how people like genuinely pants, and I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm definitely a plotter.
I mean, I have notebooks everywhere and I'm constantly scribbling things down now. But you know, if I'm sat here watching TV, a line will come to me and I think, right, I'll write that line down, but I've no idea where I'm going to put it. Or
I do.
It works itself in somehow. It's weird.
So for me, it's like I do like really heavy. This is so I can't. People give me so much shit for this. I don't even care. I do like character interviews before. So like when I start a series, the series I'm currently writing, I knew the subplot, like what I wanted to happen for like the mystery murder portion of it. I just didn't know like how the romance would weave into it.
Yeah.
So I knew the characters and all that stuff, but I'll do like very heavy character interviews. Like it's like 104 questions. Where I like literally act like an interviewer, and it's like I am asking these fictional people in my head these questions, and it's just like stuff about
that
them.
Insane.
Like,
I love it. I actually love that. That's not that I wouldn't give you shit for that. That's genius. I would like that.
Do it. You should try it. I have like the outline of all the questions. I'll send it to you.
Oh my god.
I don't know. It's like in my head, it's like I visualize that they're in front of me, that these people I created are in front of me. And so it helps me like change their dialect from like one character to another. Because one thing that really bothers me when I read series is like, oh my God, this is the same male character. Like this is the same female character the way through, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, it really helps break it apart. And it's like, okay, like, so this character kicks his foot up on the desk when he's talking because he's super nonchalant, or he uses the word dude often or something like that, right? Yeah. So it helps me like really like
call something.
Yeah, it helps me shift their dialect and the way that they move, and it makes them different to me in their heads. Like when I finish the character outline, I know these people so well that when I outline it, I'll do like what I want to do for each chapter, and if then I just let them take it away from there. Like I'll do like a light outline of each chapter and let them like guide me when it comes to dialogue. So if like their dialogue takes me in a different direction than what I originally imagined, it's like, okay, that's fine. I'll, you know, adapt to the next chapter. So yeah, that's how it works.
You should do like writing workshops or something.
Absolutely not, because I'm not that good of a writer.
For us pantsers that need some kind of order, You need to do.
I know a lot of my friends are pantsers. Yeah, do you have? What do you write in? What do you write like? Do you write in Word or like Google Docs? Like, what do you write in?
You know, I've always written in Google Docs, always for years. And then this last year, I switched to Scrivener. Is it Scrivener? I never know how to say it. Scrivener.
Scrivener for the W. Yeah, yes.
I really, really like. But I've not really used. Like I say, but this massive block I've had for this last year, and I don't think it's actually been a writer's block. I think it's just been a life block.
Yeah.
Like life has just been so crazy. And everything that I used to love just became hard work. And, I think we've all lost ourselves, haven't we, with COVID and the isolations and lockdowns and things. And we didn't know if we were coming or going. So I couldn't even look at the screen. Like, literally, I couldn't look at the screen. It just gave me headaches and I immediately got this like panic on of, well, I need to write these words and I can't do it. So I couldn't even look at Google Docs or Scrivener. I couldn't do any of it.
Yeah.
And then to finish the bad wedding date, I don't know if you saw it on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago, I booked myself a hotel room away from my kids, away from my husband. The most basic hotel room ever, by the way. It was literally a box with the uncomfiest chair and desk in. But I went in there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the Friday, and by 12 o'clock the next day, I'd written 15,000 words. And for the first time ever, I did it just in Word. And I was like, I've never written in Word before, ever.
But don't it just write in Word.
Flow. It just seemed to flow for that one book. And then I'll be going back to Scrivener though.
You soon. Need to just, Scrivener's amazing. It's the best, it's the best of both worlds for pants.
It is for you, because you can do your character profiles and everything, can't
you?
Yeah,
I'm going to send you a picture of this on Instagram. my group of author friends, we get together on Sundays and we like schedule posts and shit like that. And they
God, you're organized on social media as well.
Not really. I mean, I try to be. I try. I'm not very good at it.
I'm the worst.
They are obsessed with my Scrivener document because I keep all of my Hollow Heights, the whole series, like all the manuscripts are in the same thing, and they all characters have their own like fucking area and outline have their own thing. Like I'll have to send you pictures of it. It's crazy. But yeah.
I think I need to learn to use it properly. I've not really, because I only got it last year and I've not spent a lot of time on it. I don't really know all the ins and outs of it. So I think I need to spend a bit more time on it.
It's the funnest thing ever, especially if you're somebody who does like multiple edits. Like if you write it and then you go back to edit, you can go up and like click what edit you're on. And when you go to type it, the letters are red. And if you're on your second edit, your letters are yellow. Like, so you can see where you're doing it. See, it's super cool. It's super cool.
They're always made in the rewrites. They're always made in the edits. I always say that. I don't know how people can release after the first draft. My books are always 4, 5, 6 drafts, and then it goes to the editor.
My control issues could never. So that's why I'm a plotter. I have control issues. So do you have any interesting writing quirks, like when you sit down to eat, when you sit down to write, do you like have to be like eating like a certain snack food or like wearing a pair of socks?
The only thing I do, and it's literally for every book, is I write the majority of my books to film scores.
Okay.
So like the background music from Walk for Elephants is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
The background music for Twilight, again, I know you're not going to like that.
Okay.
The
background music. Twilight has an amazing soundtrack.
Oh, nobody can ever knock the music for Twilight. That was
so good.
Such an era. Then I write to the score of a film called 7 Pounds with Will Smith. I don't know if you
makes me cry every time.
One of my favorite films ever. But the background music is really kind of it's atmospheric. So whatever scene you need to write, whether it's, you know, hopeful or revenge or sadness or whatever, that soundtrack's got something on the score that will take you there. No real quirks, just score music.
I literally just told my partner yesterday that I wrote to the Final Destination soundtrack, the scary movie Final Destination. I love Final Destination, but the fifth one, Brian Tyler does it, and he's the one who does like all of like the Marvel stuff.
All right, okay.
I was like, oh my god, this soundtrack is phenomenal. So I listened to So I also like listening to like
it's the perfect background noise for, you know, when you need that mood setting and you can't have words or, you know, I write some songs and stuff sometimes, but there's a track on the Water for Elephants score soundtrack, which is called Did I Miss It? And a book I wrote called Let Him Go, the entire book was written with that in the background. Even now on a night, if I can't sleep, I'll just play that because it's really kind of like plinky plonky music. I'll play that on a night and it just instantly like takes me and like sleep and, you know, de-stresses me.
I love it.
Yeah, star music. I go from writing rock and roll stuff to, you know.
Sad stuff. I love it. All right, so what's the weirdest thing you've ever had to Google for a book?
Oh, do you know what? I don't really know. I don't Google a lot of weird stuff. I would probably for the Babylon MC series. I think me and Lou have both Googled certain methods of
murder,
killing people. Yeah. Or, you know, how quickly would someone die if we did this? Or I think we once heavily researched how many bullets it would take to the fuel tank of a motorbike for it to explode. But that's about it, really. I've not got a funny story there.
Did you actually blow that motorcycle up? Did it work? Did you find an answer?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we blew it up. Yeah.
Okay. So Stevie gives me such a hard time because I also Google stuff like that, but sometimes Google doesn't have like the answer I'm looking for to the specific situation that I'm in. Yeah. Right. So yeah. I have a group of guy friends I've been friends with since we were like in elementary school. And I have a group on like Snapchat and it's called like 1,000 Ways to Die. And if I have like a question about, you know, like how long would it take for, you know, like this to happen, or like, could this plausibly happen? Yada, yada, yada. I'll message them, and they're all in like different fields of work now. And they all like come together. It's like this one big, like murder party in this Snapchat. And they give me like break. It's so funny. It is so funny.
I feel like there's a book plot in there somewhere. That'd make a really good book plot for like a murder movie or something, wouldn't it? Who done it? Out of the people in this Snapchat group.
I have literally no idea, but you saying the shooting the tank of a motorcycle like had me, because I was like, okay, so if I threw like a Molotov cocktail into a car, would it explode? And one of them was like, nah, you'd have to like shoot the actual gas tank to like get it to explode. Like that, like Hollywood makes it look cooler than it is sometimes.
Yeah,
like, well, fuck, I need something to be explosive.
That's another frustrating thing as a writer, because you have to make it plausible. Whereas you see things in these number one hit movies that you're like, that would never happen. Like, look at Fast and the Furious. Oh my God. Never.
They're going to be in space, literal space.
and that still gets like, you know, 9 out of 10 on the reviews, but. Best together. Whereas, can you imagine writing that in a book? You would get absolutely slaughtered. Shit on.
Yeah, no way. Absolutely not. All right, so we're gonna shift to reading questions. So what book has your favorite cover? This can be like one of your own or like another person's.
Ooh,
or both.
My favorite cover is A Girl Like Lilac. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Okay, hold on. I think I have.
It was just the perfect cover for the story. It was Lucas Liu, who I write the Babylon MC series with. She's my graphic designer as well. She does all my covers and everything.
Yeah.
And graphics. And she read the story and she came to me with that cover, and it was just instant love at first sight. It's a soft.
I love this cover.
And that is actually Lilac as well. Like, that could be Lilac Clark from the book. And I love that when a book marries up, the cover marries up with the actual story. So it's just perfect. I love that cover so much. And I love that story.
I love it. That's the one where it's like, you're my anomaly, right?
Which one?
The A Girl Like Lilac. Isn't that the one where like he's like, you're my anomaly?
That's the one where he will like literally do everything for her, and she is the only one he will do anything for.
Yeah.
He like gets arrested 3 times for her and everything, and he's this really quiet, tame boy, but she brings out this side of him that is just so fiercely protective that he kind of changes into a different person, but not in an arsehole way. It's like in a really lovable way. He will do anything. There's the famous line where she says, I'm not worth that kind of trouble, and then he says, you're worth a war, Lilac. And
he also, there's also a line in there where it's like, oh fuck, it's like, I was dating a boy that I liked, but I was wishing for a boy I loved more, right? Is that
exactly?
Yeah, you nailed it. My memory is kicking into high gear now.
You remember more than I do, and I wrote the things. My god, my memory's so bad in my own books. But yeah,
playing Jeopardy, it's ridiculous.
But yeah, right. Cover for somebody else. I don't know, really. There's just so many gorgeous covers out these days.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, all the hotties and everything on it.
It's hard to choose, honestly.
Nice to look at.
I know, right? So what attracts you to a book? Is it the cover, the blurb, like a recommendation from others?
Definitely not the blurb. I rarely read blurbs. You know, I like a nice cover, but the cover doesn't always sell it for me. Is it really weird to say that I can just look at a cover and get a vibe if I'm going to like it or not? I tend to go for things that are kind of like not always, like the covers that I look at on Facebook and Instagram and things, I think, oh my God, he's really hot and wow. But that wouldn't necessarily make me personally read the book. There's got to be something else in there
like that different thing about it that's like
just, I don't know what it is. Yeah, like either, whether it's the way the title's put across or the tagline. Taglines are really important for me. Just that one line of, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know, this is their first chance gone wrong. Will we get another one? Anything that can make me come in with a tagline and I'm there. But mainly recommendations, I'd say. Samantha Towell is one of my really good book friends and she sends the best book recommendations through. So if Sam's loved it and she says to me, Vic, you need to read this, I'm all over it. So,
oh my god, now you gotta send them through me also.
Yeah. I will
read the shit out of those.
Have you read Danielle Laurie's The Maid series?
Don't fucking play games with me right now.
Oh, it's so good.
No, Christian Alistair is literally the love of my life. I want somebody
between him and Nico, and then he's Ronan, isn't it? The last one.
Yeah.
He's between them all. Like they because are all...
Alistair literally told her not to bring that guy up there, shot him in the head, and then left her to clean up the mess. That is king behavior. I read that and I was like, yeah, I love him. I would have had sex with him immediately after.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. But then you have like Nico who like blew up a gas station. Like,
yeah, just, I love it. I just
remain calm. Everybody chill
out. I love those guys that are just so alpha. But I found her series, because some alphas, I don't know if you think the same, some alphas can be borderline too much where you're like, oh my God, there's no way he'd hold my interest. He's such an asshole.
Like, what a dick.
Danielle Laurie's were assholes, but they were also like, you just couldn't get enough of them. You're like,
oh, it's the balance of like being an alpha asshole but also respecting the female character. Yeah, like where he has like respects and morals in certain areas but disrespect in others. It's the right ones. Yeah, it's like those are the best.
In the bedroom, respect now in the bedroom. That's all you need, isn't it?
When they are watching the news and he is just holding her hair, when Nico is just holding her hair, I was like, I didn't even know I was into this. I'm into this now. I was like,
making you want to reread them.
I was like, dude. I was like, Fletcher. I was like, I need you to hold my hair while we watch the news. I don't even watch the news.
Oh, love it.
All right, so this is the last section of the podcast, which is trope questions. Okay. It's like our favorite set of questions. We love these. So, favorite trope to write and why?
Well, obviously, rockstar romance, because I'm a massive music fan. Any kind of old school rock, new rock, I'm there. I listen to it all the time. I love that. But I am a massive lover of angst. I love writing angst. It's just the journey it takes you on, and it gives you some real meat to work with when you're writing it. So yeah, I love writing angst. I love it.
I can never even fathom how to write like an easy peasy.
I could never.
I would be like, where are the tears? I don't understand.
I'm pretty sure someone at some point is going to say to me, like, can she just write a character that is not messed up in the head? Like, can she
literally
just
me. Literally me.
Why would I want to do that?
I started writing contemporary romance when I first started. So I have like a 4-book series of like hockey romance, which I love, adore. I love those. They're very angsty hockey books. But I was writing it and like my alphas were like, dude, like you got to give somebody a good family. Like everybody has like a dead mom or an abusive dad. Like you gotta give somebody a good life.
Guilty.
And I was like, eh, I don't want to. Sorry.
When I do write some characters that have a nice family though, I'm kind of like, ugh.
It's like, that's boring.
It's sweet, but yeah, come on. Let's have someone, you know.
It's like, where is the grit?
Yeah.
I need something more. Nobody ever, like I gave one person a good family and then killed his dad. So I was like,
oh, brilliant. That's brilliant. I love it.
All right. So what is one trope you would eventually like to write and why?
Ooh, well, do you know what? So I've been with my husband 21 years now. Mm-hmm. And I got with him when I was 19 and he was 31.
Ooh, an age gap.
So I would love to write an age gap story, but we've had like a really nice 21 years, no real hiccups. I mean, he was married before me and two kids, but from day one I got on with my stepkids. They were like 4 and 2 when I met him, and they're 25 and 23 now. Mm-hmm. So I've been in their life all the time. So I'd love to do an age gap, but I think I'd find it hard to kind of not just romanticize it all from the first page.
Yeah.
I'd need to make sure I wasn't writing about me and my husband. I'd need to give some real messed up stories, but yeah, I think I'd like to do an age gap because since the whole Taylor Swift Jake Gyllenhaal thing,
That and, fucking scarf thief.
But the thing that people are now saying about age gaps is quite, like, nasty. They all think that it's a taboo subject, and it's not, you know.
Yeah.
We have two people that are just hit it off like that, and it sparks flying. That's it.
I think a lot of people have, like, an issue separating, like, yes, there can definitely be, like, an abuse of power when the guy is older and the girl is younger, like that.
Yeah.
But that is, like, a certain situation. Not
definitely.
Age gaps are going to be an abuse of power dynamic kind of thing. Yeah. So, like, Taylor Swift was with a narcissist, and he would have still been a narcissist had he had been 24 or 30, you know? So that relationship dynamic would not have changed based on his age at all. So, and I think a lot of people have, a tough time, like, separating those two things.
Yeah. And this is the problem with social media in the whole, isn't it? People pick up on things and kind of roll with it. And instead of looking at each individual case, they roll it all into one. And that's why I like writing as well, because there are so many things you can't say and discuss these days without people labeling it as wrong or taboo or, you know, straight off the bat. And I like to delve into the rights and wrongs of things and show people that it's not always wrong.
Morally gray.
But yeah, you know, the guys I were with before Carl, they were far more toxic to me than he's ever been.
Exactly.
He showed me what a real man.
Yeah.
You know, like the first time, I think we'd been on one date, and then he worked till 3 a.m. and I woke up, I got a text on my phone back in the old days when your phone made this little da-da-da-da-da noise. I don't know how old you are, but you're probably like too young for that. And it woke me up in the middle of the night, and I was like, what's that? And it just said, you know, check your doorstep. And I went downstairs, and there was 12 red roses on my doorstep. And I was like,
how sweet.
I was like, I'm not used to this. And you taking me out for meals. And we were only meant to go on one date, you know, a bit of fun. He was my boss. And I thought, oh, yeah, go out with the manager. Yeah. And we kept saying, this can't go any further. And then next thing you know, we're married. And
it went further.
We've got 4 kids between us. And
I love it.
I mean, I like to show that side of an age gap. Yeah.
I think that, like I said, like, I think people don't take, and I think it's a lot with, like, writing, and that's, I'm never going to stop reading what I like to read or writing what I like to write, because, like, a group of people think that it's not right. If you want to label it taboo, then that's your prerogative. You can do that. Yeah. However, it's a thing. It's just an issue that I think is a...
You've got to let people enjoy what they enjoy, haven't you, at the end of the day?
I don't yuck anybody's yum. Read whatever you want to read.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
This is for enjoyment purposes only, you know? Like, chill out. Everybody calm down.
Have you heard of Yolanda Olson? She's like a horror thriller kind of writer. And some of the stuff, she's a great girl. She's a really fantastic writer. But she writes some messed up stuff. And me and her get on.
I'm a title and cover person, so I'm looking at her stuff now.
You're gonna ask me for the title now, aren't you? My brain's gonna go dead.
No, I got it. I
love her as a writer, and we've seen each other at signings, and we always have a laugh. I've never read her stuff because she's quite open. This is messed up. So if you can't handle it, don't read it.
Oh, she wrote the Maledictation Saga.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, so like scavengers, vultures, and
she goes dark and messed up. We recently released an anthology together.
Scouts.
Scouts. Yeah. I loved delving into that side of the kind of stuff she writes, and the darker side and the messed up side. And that's something right now. Well, that's something I never thought I'd write, but when I was writing it, I absolutely loved it. So yeah, you know. 2 or 3 years ago, I'd probably have said to Yolanda, you know, you take care of that corner of the market, and I'm never going to do that. That's your jam, and she's damn good at what she does. But for me, then when I dipped my toe in the Scouts water, I was kind of like,
maybe. I will say that if you want to write an age gap romance, you have to read Medicine Man by Saffron Kent.
I've seen that one. Yeah. Dude.
He's a psychiatrist, and she is his patient.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she's in, like, a mental facility, like a mental hospital, because she attempted to commit suicide, and she has, like, a manic depression. And, she falls in love with her psychiatrist, and oh, my God.
Love it. What's the age gap? Is it quite, like, is it big?
She's recently 18, or, like, about to turn 19, and he's 35, 36.
Love it. I love an age gap. Yeah, so like you said, As long as age gaps are treated with respect, I am do what you got to do.
It's chef kisses. It's so good. Yeah. It's one of my favorite books ever. Yeah. All right. So what is one trope you will never write and why? Or if you're the type of person who says never say never, what's like your least on the list?
Right. So I do never say, now I've done the Scouts thing and dip my toe in that water, I will never say never. But I'm going to contradict that by saying I will never do anything like with the daddy kink. I'm sorry, each their own, and I have no disrespect for anyone, but if I'm thinking of my dad during any point, it tunes me out. I just have to put the book down, and I'm like, if the name daddy or dad or no, can't do it.
Me either.
Vomit stations. So I don't think I'd be very good at anything that involves.
I think for me, my line drawn is like, I think, so like I said, I don't yuck anybody's yum, and trust me, I'm like a garbage disposal. Have read everything, okay?
Yeah.
But I think that my line where I'm like, yeah, is like total incest, like blood-related incest.
Oh,
is like,
yeah. Yeah.
That's a line for me as a reader, yeah. But like no hate, like absolutely, if you want to read that, you enjoy that, pop off, girl, you'd enjoy that.
I've not even thought about that one. You're right. I can't, but the daddy daughter thing and the
I cannot. Now give me like a stepbrother.
Oh, now you're talking. Yeah.
Sign me up for
a stepbrother romance. That's a great one.
Those are good. Those are some of my favorites. So it's like, yeah, it's a toe, it's a line that I toe.
I think it's just all personal preference in it, you know. I am friends with so many amazing authors, especially over in England, because the circuit for signings in England is a lot smaller than in America.
Yeah.
So when we do signings in England, it's the same people, and we generally just, you know, meet up and we all see each other two or three times a year, pre-COVID, obviously. But everyone at those signings, you've got the most effed up, darkest kind of you can imagine, and then you've got the sweetest person that only writes about, you know, teenage love stories with no angst, and it's just first time lovers losing their virginity. Yeah. But all these people come together, and you stand there looking at the tables and stuff, and you think, literally, we've all stood here, and we're all waiting for these amazing readers to come in, and we've all wrote books. We're making a career out of writing books.
Yeah.
How can anyone knock anybody
for what they do?
Yeah. And every single one of those writers, no matter what the genre, has got a line of people waiting to see them. That just shows that there is something for everyone. And it's not going to please everyone. And that's the biggest hurdle us writers have to come over, you know, get over. We have to stop trying to please everyone.
Exactly.
Stop thinking about it.
We want to write, and the people will find you. There's a niche for everybody.
If someone wants to write a book called Daddy, I am all for them doing it. I just probably won't read it.
Exactly. Not for me, but definitely. So our last question is, if you were in a book, what trope would you want for your story?
Do you know? Well, I think I've kind of lived my rock star dream through Tessa and Presley. Okay. I've done that. So I would have said that before. Probably now I'm going to go with, is there such a thing as like an underdog genre? Like, I'd love to be like an underdog ugly duckling at school.
Okay. You know,
like, turn into a swan and just like kick everyone's ass. I'm a massive fan of Rocky. Like, I am the biggest Rocky Balboa fan ever. I have got a very strange obsession.
That's my dad's name.
Is it really
Rocky? Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I wanted to call my son Rocky, but Carl wouldn't allow it. I was like, can I call it Elvis? No. Rocky? No.
Damn it. They're going to find names.
Let's just go with a generic name then, fine. But no, I am obsessed with him and his writing skills. He's so underrated as a writer. He's absolutely pure genius. And the Rocky films just give me that real good kind of, you know, you can do anything kind of motivation. And I love the love story in it. So yeah, I don't know if that's a good answer, but if that were my life, I came from quite sort of, you know, humble beginnings, shall we say, and I'm working hard, and I'm gonna prove anybody that ever doubted me wrong, because that's what.
Yes, I love that. Also, did you know this is like something that I just recently learned, that when Rocky Balboa directed, the first Rocky movie, right? Like the first one that was ever made. He did it on like a low scale budget. Like it was an indie movie film.
Oh, there was literally no money.
No budget at all. And now it is one of the most highest grossing film franchises in the world.
Of all time. And he's like, he's done like three. He's done like when he was, in fact, I think there's four now. He's done the Rocky franchise, the Rambo franchise, the Expendables. Yeah. And then what's the other one now? Is it like Escape? Is something where he escapes from prison? That's another.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's not Alcatraz, is it?
It's not called that. But it is that kind of thing where they're on an island and they have to escape. It's Escape Plan.
Yeah.
Something like that. But he's, because of his slur and because of the way he looks, he doesn't get the appreciation and the...
Oh, no. And he also has Creed now, too.
Yeah, Creed. He's a damn good writer. He's so good. So talented, and I love him.
Agreed.
Yeah, I would invent a kind of like an underdog genre, and that would be me.
All right, that works. I like it. Okay, so that is our last question for you. This has been so fun. You've been so great. And we want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm like literally so thankful. I just see myself as this silly English girl that writes books. I never think anybody wants to hear about them.
Absolutely. We want to hear about you. Okay. So speaking of hearing about you, we're going to give you a few minutes. I keep saying like we're talking, like Stevie is here.
You're missing Stevie, aren't you? I'm missing Stevie. I thought I was going to get to meet her.
She's like the left side of, she's the yin to my yang. We talk about all the time. Like I read the dark and scary stuff and she reads the easy fluff. And so
I'll have to come back next year. I'll come back on next year and we can have it another go with Stevie.
Oh my God. Yes. No joke. For real. You need to do it.
I've got some more books under my belt.
Yes. So this is where we give you a few minutes to kind of talk about if you have a book coming out soon or like a sale going on or something, and let our readers know, let our listeners know where to find you. So
yeah. Readers isn't wrong. They probably are your readers as well.
But go ahead.
But yeah, so the next thing I've got going on, like I said before, is The Bad Wedding Date. It's my first release in, I think it's about 17, 18 months. Fake Date Romance. I've got the cover reveal tomorrow, if we're recording now, so that's Thursday the 16th of December, and it released on January the 25th. Pre-order is on Amazon now. It's going to be in Kindle Unlimited as well, because I love Kindle Unlimited, and I know a lot of people don't, but I am a big Kindle Unlimited fan. I love that feeling where you just go and look for a book and it's bam, oh, it's there.
One click.
Zero pennies right now. That's out on January 25th. And then after that, I am going to be writing a book called Whenever You Call, which is going to be a real sort of one night stand turned into this relationship that becomes so much more over a decade or more. So that's going to be real fun. I know it's going to be a real like long-winded kind of thing, but it's in my head so much. I feel like it's just there waiting to burst out. But yeah, that's it really. That's all I've got. Obviously, the Scouts Anthology is still on sale until the January the 4th, I think it is. And then once that's done, it disappears forever. And that has got 16 authors in it.
Paperback of that bad boy's fine. Don't worry about it. It ain't disappearing for me.
It is massive. Have you seen it? It is like literally.
Oh yeah, it's in the other room over here. It's literally like this thick. It's huge.
You could use that as a weapon in one of your books to kill somebody.
I love it though.
It's got some, and I actually love that story in there that I wrote. That was featuring Drake and Misha. That's kind of like a revenge story, but it's where the guy's getting revenge on the girl.
Yeah.
Instead of the other way around. So yeah, that's all my release news at the moment. I've got the J Team on Facebook, which is open to any readers. You don't have to read my work. If anybody wants to come along and join in, we have a lot of fun on there and talk book, all sorts of books, a lot of hot men. You know, I like to share my music. You'd love it.
I gotta join. I don't know if I'm already a part of it or not.
You gotta get in the J Team. Okay, I ramble. I post a lot of drunken messages because, you know, I like my Coronas. I like the odd Corona on the night when I drink. And and anyone's welcome. But yeah, that's about it really from me.
All right, great. Thank you again so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been amazing.
we hope to talk with you again soon.
Yes, definitely. And good luck with your books and whatever you're doing next as well. And stop doing those post-it notes.